Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, July 1st, 2014. With me today is Kelly Goumont. And how are you, Kelly?
I'm well. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing great. And also, Dave Hamilton. I hope you're doing well, Dave.
I am doing splendid today, Jeff.
Splendid. That is awesome. Okay, so there's a couple topics that I thought would be like really fun, and by really fun, I mean of great interest to me. And since Brian's not here today, it's all about me, I suppose. So the first topic that I wanted to take a look at is this discussion that came up with the two of you this morning about the Logitech remotes. And the deal for me is every time that I have considered picking up a Logitech remote, because the whole concept is like really cool, I end up not doing it because I run into people that have bought them and leave them sitting in the corner saying, it's too complicated, I couldn't figure it out. And then I hear other people saying, well, it's like this big privacy invasion and they shouldn't know what I'm watching and stuff. And you guys both have these and deal with them
several.
There you go. And deal with them from different perspectives. So enlighten me.
So I've been using I bought the very first Harmony remote, the blue one, that long before they were purchased by Logitech at Macworld Expo, whenever that was. And I feel like it was 10 years ago, maybe more. But it certainly was 10 years plus, and it was great. I mean, David Pogue summarized it when he says it solved the babysitter problem, because you didn't have to understand how all the components work together. You just pushed a button that said, I want to watch a DVD, and it turned on all the right components and set them into their right modes. And as long as you left it pointed at the TV while it was going through its machinations, it worked great. But setting it up was exactly as geeky as you would expect. And that process hasn't really, at least for me, gotten any better. The ones we use now are the 880 and 890s. But I've never understood the privacy thing. I mean, if somebody's worried about the folks at Logitech or whoever hacks into Logitech knowing what brand of DVD player they have, that's sort of a weird obsessive thing to me. So I can't abide that sort of thinking. But otherwise, they work fine. They're just a bit kludgy to set up once. Then once you sort of get used to it, it's fine. And you just sort of deal with it. But I've never understood the people that leave them in the corner, because it's freaking, what do you do otherwise? It's the best that I've ever found. So why would you leave it in the corner?
Well, otherwise,
why not just go through setting it up and then you're good to go?
Okay, this totally makes sense. And I'm assuming the otherwise is you pick up 3, 5, 6 mm-hmm. remotes, whatever, so that you can turn things on and you have to have your checklist. Oh, the babysitter list. I get it now.
Yeah.
And you have to go through this stupid list, and when you read the list, it doesn't work right. And
right,
yeah. So this seems like the Holy Grail thing. Now you're saying that what's really being tracked by Logitech is what devices you own, not what content you're watching. And my assumption was that they were just tracking everything you were doing based on the complaints that I was hearing from people. But now I'm guessing that they're being overly paranoid.
Well, it may be possible to do that, but I don't know how you would – I don't know how they would manage to know what I'm watching on TiVo or on Netflix based on the arrow presses of the remote. I think what they have on their servers is that I have – this brand of receiver and this brand of DVD player, brand and model, and I have this make and model of television, and that's it. And and my email address, which is attached to the profile for the remote. I've never heard people complain about privacy, but everyone I know who has used one, I have 2 880s at my house now, and I think we have an 890 that we don't use because in the basement we determined that we could do everything with an app on my old iPhone 4. So everything in the basement on the big TV runs off an iPhone because we can do it all over Wi-Fi, and we put everything in the closet behind the television so that we don't have to look at all the gear and all the wires.
Okay, Kelly, you just sparked something in my mind. You said we can do all this with an app.
Uh-huh.
So at this point, is there any value in getting a new all-in-one remote, or are we better off waiting until HomeKit rolls out with iOS 8 to see what other companies do? Because maybe I can just do everything from my iPhone and screw the remote.
You might be able to, first of all, you might be able to do everything from your iPhone now. That's what we determined. I found a TiVo remote control. I have one for an app for the receiver, an app for the television, and an app for controlling the DVD player. What we did at my house, the thing that started the whole conversation this morning, was at my house, just recently, we picked up the Harmony Smart Control from Logitech. And what that is a combination of sort of a standard issue remote with the tactile buttons, which is still an advantage in a remote control, to have actual buttons and not just use a phone. But it also comes with this little puck that you plug in that can then control the other devices. So I put the puck in the closet, and I can control it from the remote itself or from an app on my phone. And this has streamlined setup, because I've played with it a little bit to get it up and running. And this has streamlined the setup dramatically from what it used to be for the old 880s and 890s, and you know what everybody remembers from setting up Logitech remotes. Using a Logitech remote is a joy, because like Dave said, you set up the buttons however you want to. So the one that I had set up previously in our old AV setup had a bunch of buttons. There was one for watch TiVo, one for watch Apple TV, one for watch a movie, and one for listen to music. And whatever I pushed, it would turn on and switch inputs on all of the relevant devices. And then as an added bonus, I could then still use the remote to control the volume. And if I had the Apple TV hooked up to the speakers, then it would use the receiver to adjust the volume instead of adjusting the TV volume. And when I'm watching TiVo, it adjusts the TV volume. It's smart enough, because I told it, you know, I can still use the volume button and get the right thing no matter what. So to me, the interesting piece of this is that once the setup is taken care of, you don't generally have to do a whole lot with it, apparently, unless you're at my house, because I end up having to screw with these on a regular basis, and it drives me up a wall. So watching this one get streamlined, where I just go in and say, here's the make and here's the model, and it says, is it one of these? Because a couple of them, it needed a dash in a different place or something. I mean, yeah, that's the one. And then it goes, okay, now you're ready to run it. That was awesome. And it was really, really nice to be able to configure it usefully. Now, what I would like to see is for HomeKit to also be able to communicate with this device. And that's a total wish on my part. I wrote earlier this week about how – or early, last week, I mean – about how I think the Apple TV is going to be the thing that runs everything. I just don't think the Apple TV is going to be able to control my TiVo. So maybe I'll still need something on my phone in order to do that, but it would be really nice if there was some integration there. I'm just excited because Mr. Kelly is really excited about being able to use a remote with tactile buttons again. That was part of the reason that we bought this in the first place. So I'll let you guys know how it turns out.
Cool. I'm looking forward to hearing about this. And and I'm totally cool with you guys being my guinea pigs on this.
Well, channel surfing on an iPhone sucks.
We will always be Harmony. Yeah, that right. That's the thing, is I'm trying to figure out where the best UI is, and I feel like it still is with a remote that has dedicated real buttons.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the idea of configuring everything from my iPhone, although it should be just as easy or easier to configure it all from my Mac. So maybe whatever Logitech is – right, but maybe whatever Logitech is doing on the UI front will spill over to the app for the more standard remote things like the 880, 890 series style things. And if Dave you Hamilton, have an extra eight,
living in hope since 2014.
That's right. But if you have an extra $890, I might want to buy it from you. So we should talk about that offline.
Yes.
Awesome.
Depending how well I can get this set up, it may or may not be irrelevant. And if it is irrelevant, right, you're first in line.
Sweet.
Look at that. We're networking. We're making stuff happen right here. Okay. Another topic that I wanted to take a look at is something that that Kelly, I'm sure you have an interest in as well.
And that is?
And that's comic book reader apps for the iPad.
My Green Lantern Power Ring and I are listening.
Yeah. By the way, I do love your Green Lantern Power Ring. And for those of you playing at home, that Kelly's ring has a special place for me because the very first time I met her, she was wearing the ring and showed it to me. And I immediately made her pose with it so I could take a picture. That's how cool her Green Lantern ring is. And as I say these things, I now wonder how is it that I managed to get to have dates. But the real point is, a couple weeks ago, well, about a month ago now, we got the news that Amazon is buying Comixology. And then a couple weeks later, Comixology pulled in-app purchases out of their app. And some people were like, yeah, whatever, because I can just go to the website and still do what I want to do. But for a lot of us, and I'm definitely in this camp, it totally ruined the experience for me because
it's horrible.
Because now I lost my virtual comic book store where I can just sort through thousands of titles from pretty much every publisher there is and then just pick stuff up and buy it right there. And that experience is now broken. So I've been putting together a list that will be running shortly after we finish recording of my six favorite comic book reader apps. And so I'm going to share those, and I'm curious what you think. And Dave, I just realized that I don't know how deep into the comic book world you are.
I am not deep in it at all. So I may have some great inspirational wisdom to share here that is completely something that someone in comic books would never think of, or I will remain quiet and this will be the last thing anybody ever hears from me today.
Well, okay, I can't wait to see what happens for you, Dave. Okay, so the thing for me was I first looked to see which apps support Comixology, meaning that they're using the Comixology structure.
Format?
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
And so that led me to the Marvel app, the DC app, Image Comics, and IDW. Mm-hmm. And then as an offshoot from IDW, because I am a Star Trek fan, there's also a dedicated Star Trek comic book app. But it's all of that content will show up in the IDW app.
Now, for the time being, just to jump in really quick, for people who maybe are going, but hey, Star Wars and Dark Horse, and they're missing from the list. Well, here's the thing. As a Star Wars nerd, I got your back, yo. Dark Horse is a self-contained universe unto itself. It's its own app, and at least from what I understand, is going to continue that way for some time. I know Marvel bought Dark Horse. No, I'm getting that backwards. Marvel bought Star Wars, so the Star Wars comics are going to be going away from the Dark Horse store.
There you go.
But the Dark Horse store is a self-contained unit. So if you want to read Star Wars comics for now, what you do is you install the Dark Horse app and you read in the Dark Horse app, and that experience has not changed. And so I'm going to describe the way things used to work. And that was, you read Star Wars number one from last year, and you get to the end of it and you go, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I love these characters. They're set in a really interesting time. Princess Leia just jumped out of an X-Wing and started beating down a TIE fighter pilot after she shot him out of the sky. This is awesome. I can't wait to read more. You get to the last page and it says, would you like to buy issue 2 for $1.99? And you say, why, yes, as a matter of fact, I would. Bingo bango, no muss, no fuss. You're in the middle of issue 2 before you know it. This is the way Comixology used to work as well. And I know a number of people who have binged on Comixology because somebody runs up to them, arms a flabbergasted, and says, Jeff, you aren't reading Hawkeye and you need to stop whatever you're doing right now because it is less important than the fact that you are not reading Hawkeye and you need to remedy this immediately.
By the way, people, this is actually a true story. That's how I got into Hawkeye.
This really did happen. So the next time you see Jeff wearing purple chucks, that's me. And Jeff, you're welcome.
Thanks.
So this is how it used to work. It was a beautiful thing if you were a comic person, because when you got to the end of the issue, you didn't have to go back to the comic store. You didn't have to do anything else. If it's the middle of the night and you can't sleep and you finally get a chance to catch up on some of those issues and you get to the end and you're like, I'm still two issues back, it's going to offer you the opportunity to buy the next issue. It's a beautiful thing. And then Amazon got their claws into Comixology, which, by the way, was probably as valuable as it was, valuable enough to get Amazon's attention, by virtue of the fact that people were able to do this, because people were spending lots of money in the Comixology app because it was so easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know Amazon is in the business of making it easy for people to give them money. So for me, I was less upset and more confused that Amazon would take out the in-app purchasing, only because it seems to fly in the face of everything they believe in with the one-click purchase and the what have you.
Yeah, maybe someday that will change. I doubt it, though. And mm-hmm. And by the way, Dark Horse is on my list because it's important that people know where they can, at least for now, get their Star Wars fix. And mm-hmm. Yeah, so the downside to having to have a list of comic book apps on your iPad or iPhone is that now, instead of being able to do the complete virtual comic book store browsing in one place, it's like you have separate publisher stores side by side, and you just have to go into each one to get that experience. But
and that was the beauty of Comixology, because yes. You didn't have to go to the Marvel store to buy Iron Man and the DC store to buy Green Lantern. You could go to Comixology and you could get one Iron Man title and a Green Lantern title and maybe a little something from somebody else along the way. And it was great.
It was. And I miss that. That's gone. I really do.
So what's the experience now? Because you gave me the play-by-play of this the other day, and I feel like we need to let people know exactly how excruciating this has become.
Okay, so I actually tested this the other day, and after I explained this, we're almost out of time, so I'll have to wrap up after that. I decided that I wanted to go and pick up the latest issue in a comic book series that I'm really enjoying right now. It's called Sex Crimes, and if you're a kid, don't read it. If you're an adult, it's awesome. And so what I did was I went into the Comixology app to try and buy this. And eventually what I figured out was that I had to put it on my wish list. Then I have to leave the app and go to the website, the Comixology website, log in, then find my wish list, find the issue, say I want to buy the issue, and then say I want to buy the issue again. And then it charges my credit card, and that's it. And there's no explanation what happens next. So I go back to the iPad app, and I start pawing around, and the issue's not there. Eventually, I find out I have to go back to my wish list to then see my recent purchases. Actually, no, you don't hit the wish list. You have to go find recent purchases directly. And then in there, I can see issues that I can download, and it will show up as a download, which I can then download and then read. And that's the experience that Amazon is giving us for comic book purchases on the iPad. And this is why we get to have a list going on TMO shortly, so that you know what other apps to get, so you can just say, I want to buy this and start reading.
Because that's horrible.
Yes. All right. And so we are like totally out of time. And yeah, check out my comic list when it goes up today. Dave, thank you so much for joining me. And thank you for being so patient through the comic part where
we all stopped speaking English.
Yeah, yeah. We're totally on a Tinder talk.
The user experience of it part, I get. I mean, I'm not into comics, but obviously I understand content consumption, and it's bizarre what's going on there. That's it's weird.
I find it to be very weird too. Kelly, thank you for joining me, and thank you for geeking out with me on comics.
Of course, anytime.